This question writes, are we still identifying as the activity taking place in our hearts and minds, or are we remembering our refuge in the Buddha, in just knowing awareness? This question is my question, actually, which somebody who read a recent issue of the Dhammapada Reflections fed it back to me, presumably wanting me to say more on the topic, which I'm happy to do. It's tremendously important. If we don't have this way of framing the content of our experience, then it's like we're imprisoned or obliged to always feel like we're victims of our suffering. There was a particularly important time in my monastic training when I was living with my first teacher, Venerable Ajahn Tate, and he called myself and another monk in to have an interview, find out where we were at and offer some guidance, for which I'm enormously grateful. I don't remember what the other monk and I actually said. However, what he said in response was, he said, as it was translated to me, because my grasp on Thai was pretty poor in those days. What I understand, he said, was, your task and practice is to learn to see the difference between awareness and the activity of awareness, or jit, naka agan gong jit, the heart and the activity of the heart. It was so helpful to have that, particularly at that stage in my practice. And it still holds true. And here we are, 40, going on 50 years later. The refuge in the Buddha, or what I call there, the refuge in just knowing awareness, that's what we have faith in. There's the possibility of letting go of being identified as the content and to fall back into the context, to use that way of speaking. The context is selfless, just knowing awareness. One way of understanding the nature of the consciousness of awakened being is to say they are identified as that. There's no split, there's no identify with. They are being that selfless, just knowing awareness. Whatever arises, there's just knowing. It's like this. There's sights, there's nothing extra. Nothing added, nothing taken away. There's sounds, nothing extra. Nothing added, nothing taken away. There's fragrances, nothing extra. Nothing added, nothing taken away. And so on, the six senses. For the rest of us, we have sight, sound, smells, tastes, and so on, and we add to it, accepting, rejecting. And that's the story of our lives, and it's so normal for so many people that if we're not careful, we can assume that that's an obligation to live that way, to be identified as the content of awareness, as the activity of consciousness, which is all conditioned. So the Buddha gave us this encouragement to align ourselves, to train ourselves, to have faith in the possibility of selfless, just knowing awareness, or the teacher, the Buddha, to express our faith in this possibility of being selfless, just knowing awareness, in which whatever arises and ceases, it just comes and goes. Whether there's engagement and enacting on it or not, that's defined by wisdom and compassion, not by I, the conditioned perception of a separate self. And this is something to be cultivated. I start every day and end every day bowing to the shrine, in Pali or in English reciting, I go for refuge to the Buddha, I go for refuge to the Dhamma, I go for refuge to the Sangha. This I that I experience myself to be, aligning myself with these true principles by body and by speech, bowing and reciting this. And this is the training. And if we don't, well then it's the risk is that the I is just going to continue to be overly impressed with its ability to manipulate conditions. But that's so tedious. Endlessly trying to get what we like and get rid of what we don't like. There was an occasion when somebody who was suffering terribly came to visit Ajahn Chah and asked for some help, and specifically asked for an explanation on what's meant by the middle way. And Ajahn Chah pointed out, well, the middle way is between the two extremes. One extreme is taking sides with liking, the other extreme is taking sides with disliking. The middle way is the knowing of disliking, knowing liking. That knowing, selfless, just knowing awareness, that's the refuge, that's the middle way. That's, again, I find a very helpful way to frame practice. Always trying to deal with our liking and disliking. Oh, I shouldn't like this, I shouldn't dislike that, I should like all beings. And well, that's sort of true on some level. How are we going to get to the point of not being driven by our conditioned liking and disliking? Well, we need to come back another level and look at our relationship to that very movement of liking and disliking. And this is so important about cultivating formal meditation practice or disciplining attention so that we have a change in relationship to how we feel about experience or how we view experience. And if you settle into a relative degree of conventional contentment and calm, for instance, and then there's something disagreeable arises and impinges on the mind, if we're sharp enough, then maybe we'll see that we've got a choice whether we're going to make anything out of it or not. Do we need to leave the base of quietude and go into making something out of this impression? Why did they make that noise? Or why did that happen to me 10 years ago? That shouldn't have happened. They shouldn't have. And then we've lost it. We're doing that. We're giving up our refuge and becoming the worldling. This is a really helpful way of seeing it. Why do we keep doing it? Well, that's another question. And I am sometimes a bit hesitant to say what I really think about what's going on. My impression is that very many meditators are still, unfortunately, primarily identified in the thinking mind. Hopefully not totally identified in that. And so when they're thinking about practice and they're invested in their ideas about practice, they're not taking it to the next level and really feeling what it's like to be taking sides with agreeable or disagreeable feelings that they're having in their hearts or in their belly. And we need to do that. It's like this, the conversation that is sometimes had about, did the Buddha teach you've got to get rid of desires? And a good number of Buddhists think the Buddha said you've got to get rid of desire, where actually, even if you just read the scriptures, the Buddha talks about cultivating wholesome desires. He doesn't demonize desire. He is very clear about craving. All craving leads to disaster. What's the difference between desire and craving? Well, if we're still up in our heads thinking, then maybe we don't see the difference, because it's just semantics, it's just words, it's just noise. Whereas if we come down into our hearts and we read, what does it feel like to want doubt to disappear? And what does it feel like to expand the feeling awareness in our chest, in our hearts, to sense the possibility that that wanting doubt to disappear is a movement, and you don't have to become it. There can be the knowing of that movement. And what happens if we don't cling to that conditioned reaction of trying to get rid of doubt? What happens? That's a different sort of experiment from merely thinking, what is the teacher talking about when he says you don't have to get rid of desire? Because the Buddha said you've got to get rid of desire. That's looking at the finger, not looking at the moon that the finger is pointing towards. So often if you're trying to point your dog to look in a certain direction, the dog's not intelligent enough to look in that direction. Just looks at your finger and say, look in that direction. And they don't have the faculties. Maybe smart dogs do. Fortunately, as human beings, we have the intelligence to understand that when the finger is pointing at the moon, you're supposed to look at the moon, not the finger. And that's what the Buddha's teachings about. All the words, all the teachings are pointing in a certain direction. They're pointing in the direction of the heart of awareness, where we feel what we feel. Again, for so many meditators, they're not daring to take the journey into the frightening territory of not knowing what they're doing, and becoming addicted to certitude. If you don't know what's going on with life, which is perfectly understandable, you're 20, 24, 30, you come across these teachings and you have a concept of what's going on. The Buddha explained what's going on amazingly clearly. And then you feel good because you've got this great conceptual understanding of what's going on. If we're not kindful, we can cling to that, become that good feeling, and get stuck at that level, not daring to let go of that rung of the ladder and take the next rung up, which means going towards uncertainty, towards feeling uncertain. That's why faith is so important. Not clinging to good feelings of being sure, rather trusting in true principles, trusting that the Buddha was awakened, trusting that there are teachings that lead to awakening, trusting that there have been human beings who have followed these teachings and formed a community of awakened beings who are free from suffering. And letting that trust be the motivation for inspiring us to come down out of our heads, into our hearts, into our bellies, into our bodies, and feel what it feels like to be unsure. The fear of uncertainty, I don't know what's going to happen. And not go reaching out for a book, not go reaching to a teacher to tell us what to do next. To sit with, to breathe with, to walk with, to be with, feeling uncertain, and examine our relationship to the fear of uncertainty, to grow out of the habit of clinging to synthetic security, which comes with ideas about practice. That we need to be willing to stop enjoying the conceptual clarity and go down into the fog, go down into the darkness, into the areas of unawareness, of uncertainty, and meet ourselves there with the confidence and the sense of safety that naturally comes from keeping moral precepts. Hopefully with a well-developed sense of indriya sangvara or intentional composure, and the interest in seeing what's true, what's real. If the question is, are we still following the content of the mind, or are we honoring our commitment to the refuge of selfless just knowing awareness, to the Buddha, what we can do about it is notice where and when and how we abandon our confidence and trust in just knowing, little by little, gradually. Of course we keep forgetting. Surely what matters is the increased willingness to keep beginning again. So thank you for the question and this opportunity to comment.